You're listening to the Writers Forum, and I'm your host, Mike Tusa. And today, I'll be speaking with author Parker Adams about his new book, The Lockbox. Parker's had several careers as a marine biologist, as a patent lawyer, and as an author. He is the graduate of Duke University and Notre Dame. Welcome to the show, Parker.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, without going too far into this, you're right under a pseudonym. So what is the explanation for doing that? And many people do.
Sure. Yeah, my real name is Joseph Reed, and my first book series actually was published under my real name, Joseph Reed. This was, you know, a new publisher, a new series, a new character, totally new universe. And so it made sense to everyone to give it a fresh start and launch it under a pseudonym. And so we picked Parker Adams for a variety of reasons.
Okay, good. Well, as I mentioned, you've had a couple of different careers. How do you end up as a writer?
You know, it's one of those funny things. Writing was always something I did for my other jobs. And even when I switched from science to law, you know, I kind of did that thing where you make a list on the pad of, you know, what am I good at? And writing was one of those things, but it was never one of those jobs I thought, oh, I can make a living just doing this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was always an avid reader. I read a ton of books, a ton of fiction. And so my wife and I went on a vacation when she was pregnant with my first daughter. I was about 19 years ago. And I brought a bunch of books with me, and I was reading through those. And reading through them, it really crystallized to me that, you know, while I thought I was a pretty good writer, writing fiction is kind of like the Olympics of writing. I mean, these guys and girls are really, really good. They're the best there are. And I thought, wow, I wonder if I could write like this. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how it started. And yeah, I've been doing it ever since.
Well, you're a patent lawyer. I practiced for 34 years. So
okay.
As a lawyer, you have to write. How does that type of writing influence, help, hinder when you start to write creatively and write fiction?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the most transferable skill, like a lot of journalists write books, a lot of lawyers write books, we're used to writing on deadline. And so I think that plays into being an effective professional writer. You know, the law writing, the legal writing is mostly persuasive stuff. It can be dry, it can be boring. One of the challenges, if you're a litigator like me, is to try and make those things more interesting and more exciting. And so I think I've always been looking for, you know, on this sentence, on this paragraph, on this page, how do I get the reader to keep going? And that's definitely, you know, the tack you take in a thriller as well. You know, the subject matter is totally different, but I'm a patent lawyer in my day job, and a lot of my books have some aspect of technology to them. And so I'm also bringing that, you know, the ability to describe technology, hopefully in an understandable, approachable way, and hopefully doing that in my books too.
You know, I interviewed a judge, David Ellis, who writes crime fiction. And when I asked him that question, he said, I hadn't expected this, and curious how you think about it. He said, well, there's no difference because you're telling stories, whether you're writing legal briefs or whether you're writing fiction. Now, I think there are differences, but it's a clever way or an interesting way to look at it, don't?
No, that's absolutely true. And I think the best lawyers, you know, are good storytellers. And when you're trying to relate to a jury or trying to relate to a judge and get a result, you absolutely want to tell stories. A lot of people ask me how litigation impacts being a writer. And what I say to them is that litigation and fiction writing are kind of the same process, but in reverse. So in litigation, if you're a lawyer, you know, we go out and we find these little pieces of evidence, these little clues, and we sort of patch them together into a mosaic that then you're giving to the judge or the jury at the end of the case, and it's the whole picture. In fiction, I get to start with the end. I know who did it, right? And then I take a hammer and I smash that thing, and then I take the little clues and I figure out where to sprinkle them so that the detective or the protagonist will find them. So it's kind of the same process, but just in opposite directions.
Are you an outliner or what they call a panzer, you know, fly by the seat of your pants?
I am more of an outliner. I don't outline, you know, every single thing. I tend to have an overarching plot, you know, that I know I'm going to start at A, I know I'm going to end at Z, and I know there's these five or six things I need to hit in between. And then getting in between those things is kind of where the fun happens and where the magic happens. So there's always an outline, and I know where I need to get, but I may sort of go off on a tangent or find some new way to get there.
All right. Well, let's talk about the new book, The Lockbox.
Sure.
The story occurs during the pandemic lockdown. Is that when you wrote it?
It is. I was sitting at home in the pandemic, like everybody else was, with my kids, trying to figure out what to write next and whether I should do something in my other series or not. I'm a big fan of heist movies. They were my favorites growing up, and watching the news accounts, watching the empty freeways out here in California and things like that, it occurred to me that it would be just about the perfect time to pull off a big crime. And that's we were kind of off and running with that.
Okay. Well, your main character goes by the name, is it Monolock or Monolock?
Monolock, yes. Monolock. Like Donna with an M.
Okay. Says. Well, she's 6'1" with red hair. I'm already in love as soon as I read that part of it. Where did the idea for this character come from?
Yeah, it was a variety of things. The protagonist in my first series was a male air marshal. I wanted to do something very different from that. As I dove into the world of safecracking, because she's an elite safecracker, most of them are men. And so I wanted to have her be sort of distinctive. So letting her be a woman was something different there. And really some of the aspects of her character and her background just sort of filled out as I went through. The fact that she's a big physical woman and is a physical presence was kind of important to certain aspects of the plot and also certain aspects of her background. She was in the military. She's good with her hands. She's a very blue collar person. And so having her be a physical presence made a lot of sense.
Well, you actually touched on what I was going to ask you next is, what is her backstory? She was in the military, but there's more to it than that, right?
Right. She was in the Army for a while. She washed out of the Army or was chased out of the Army for reasons that come out in the book. And I'll leave it hanging there for the readers. But yeah, the reasons she got flushed out are very important to her character and what she's looking for and what she wants. And then ultimately, some of the stakes of why this heist is so meaningful to her, what she's trying to get out of it.
All right. One of the other characters who really doesn't make an appearance, but is in the background and has an impact, is a high school teacher that she had who goes by the name of the Mule.
Yes.
He plays an important part in her life, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. She met him when she was sort of a wayward teen. He was her shop teacher, and he was the one who taught her a lot of what she knows about, you know, working with machines and working with her hands and just being an upstanding person. He was a father figure in her life, and he'd been in the military, and he sort of steered her in that direction to try and give her a purpose and try and give her a career. And so, yeah, he does factor into everything she does because he's such a mentor figure to her.
Well, Mona has a special skill set. You've already alluded to it, which is important to the story involving safe cracking. And the book has some really interesting, you sent me down some rabbit holes and detailed information about safes and safe cracking, including referencing some real life famous safe crackers. I didn't realize there was a competition among safe crackers, which you bring. Did you know some of this on your own, or did you have to dive in and do the research?
It was all research. I came to it knowing that if I was going to have a heist, I was going to have a safe. And I approach that kind of like I do with my law practice. If I have a technology that I need to get inside, I find some research books and find some articles and dig deep on it. And that's really where I found the profiles of the famous safe crackers, learned a lot about locks and how safes work and things like that. And so, there's obviously some creative license I've taken in the book. You know, the actual safe isn't a real safe that she cracks, but all the pieces, parts to it are real life, things. And then there's a bunch of, real life detail mixed in that all comes from the research.
Well, you know, it wasn't, I knew nothing about safecracking and it was interesting. It wasn't overbearing. I thought it worked really well. It drew me in and said, I said, geez, I didn't know this and wish I could know some more. Now,
good, I'm
in
glad.
The book, there are some occasions when Mana recollects a prior friendship with a woman named Corey that she was in the military with. As an author, how do you know when to insert these recollections without breaking the flow of the narrative?
Wow. Great question. And it's one of those pieces of magic. I don't know that I have any kind of formula for it. One of the challenges to writing thrillers is you want the reader to keep turning pages, but you also have to give them moments to catch their breath. And I tend to write pretty high octane stuff. I write a lot of chases. I write a lot of fights. And so I think there's a natural sort of rhythm there to, okay, we just got done with this big action piece. the character's naturally going to reflect on what just happened or what she needs to do next. And that's a natural time when we as individuals would, sort of think about things and recollect things or it's a logical time to get into backstory. So that's, to the extent there's a formula to it, that's probably what it is.
Well, it works really well. I mean, I had not put it in words as you just did, but there were occasions where I'm moving fast through it. And then there's this backtrack to sit there. And it made perfect sense that the character would reflect on some of these things because they were tied in. Now, talk to me about the relationship, because this was a little mysterious, the relationship between Mana and Corey, the gal that she was in the military with.
Sure. They are or were. Very, very good friends. They met in basic training. Mana was kind of the star of her basic training class, and Corey was kind of the dunce. And so Mana kind of gets assigned to help Corey along. And in that moment, they forge a friendship because of they have some similar things about their upbringings. They both have lost their parents. They're both sort of in the military to find themselves. And so they forge, kind of a unique friendship. There's a deep love between them. And I probably should stop there to let readers discover more, but that's certainly the relationship that's...
Well, one of the things that struck me, good books have universal themes no matter what the genre is. And this was one I think most people could identify with. You've had someone in your life that wasn't part of your family that you met, that you got close to. But in this case, it results in Mana having to look after a young boy named Evan, who was Corey's son.
Yes.
And Locke is raising him as her own son. And part of the plot involves Evan getting kidnapped. The fellow that kidnaps him has some interesting associates. Talk to us about them, because I want to come back to at least one of them later on.
Sure. Every good heist story, I think, needs a team. Right. And this is sort of a team of misfits or a team of criminals. There's the prototypical strongman for all the heavy lifting.
That's King, right?
Yes, that's King. Okay. There is a life acrobatic woman named Queen. And then we have Jack, who is mischievous, good with knives and very, very dangerous. And so that's the team that's assaulting this this place, trying to get at what they're getting at in the heist.
Well, and again, with each one of them, and I'm sure readers will do the same, you start to reflect and think, okay, do I know anybody who might quite fit into that category? Now, there is the job that they're hired to do is to crack, or she, that she's hired to do, excuse me, is to crack a safe that holds some very important objects. And it's located on a Russian oligarch ship. So I have to ask, were you influenced in any way here by the Ukrainian war and the sanctions and all that that involved Russian oligarchs?
It's interesting you asked that. When I originally wrote the book, none of that had happened yet. And so really what inspired it was an article I read about during the pandemic, millionaires and billionaires in France were sort of living on their yachts, and had access to a bunch of things, testing and food and things that you know us regular folks kind of didn't. Mm-hmm. And there was sort of a backlash against that, and so I thought that was a really interesting, you know, sort of socioeconomic moment that I wanted to get in there. And so that's why it happens on the super yacht, and that's why it's a billionaire. The fact that, you know, yeah, the Russian oligarchs and the Russian yachts have been in the news certainly hasn't hurt. But that wasn't the inspiration. That was just sort of good fortune on my part.
Okay. Now, there's suspense throughout the story. And part of that has to do with whether or not Mana can actually break into this safe. Did you know at the outset the conclusion you were going to write before you wrote it? I know you talked a little bit about the pieces that you do outline. Did you know that going in, or did it evolve organically?
Yeah, no, I knew the conclusion. I almost always know the conclusion to the books before I write them, because you're building to that moment, and usually the last scene or the next to the last scene, you know, the sort of the climax of the book. I kind of always have that in mind, because you need to be working towards that and getting towards that throughout the story. There were definitely little detours in there that I wasn't, you know, that I hadn't planned and wasn't expecting, but the actual conclusion was planned from the start.
When you talk about the detours in that, I'm curious, you know, yeah. Who creates those detours? This is going to sound like an odd question. Do no. you create them, or does the character create them?
I mean, the character creates them in the sense that it's me reflecting on what is the character going to do in this moment, and what are all the other characters doing in this moment, and what's really going to happen if you're asking yourself, you know, all the right what if questions. Clearly, that comes from me because it's all in my head. But yeah, no, a lot of authors talk about the characters dictate the action, and I think that's absolutely true. You have to put yourself in each of these characters' heads and say, okay, if I was that person in this situation, what am I realistically going to do?
Yeah. Authors will talk about living with their characters while they're writing the book. Is that something you have experienced where you have a thought that Mana's going to do such and such, and then it's maybe an hour later, you know, that's not going to work. Is that part of your process?
Yeah. I write early in the mornings when I first wake up. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to do when I'm really sort of in the groove on a book is I try to go to bed thinking about questions, you know, the scene I'm going to write the next day or the action piece or whatever it is. And a lot of times you wake up and you are inspired to sort of just hit the ground running. To the extent I live with the characters, I think that's probably the way, I let them sort of play around in my subconscious and when I'm asleep and let all those things bang around in my brain. And then hopefully when I wake up, that's when it's really fresh and it's almost dreamlike, and you can sort of get it out on the page real fast before you lose it.
Well, now you are a litigator. I was a litigator. Yeah. So okay. I'm assuming you have a pad next to the bed that allows you in that middle of the night when you wake up with that thought about a character to jot it down, unless you have a very good memory to make sure you don't forget it when you wake up.
Yeah, it's my phone, but absolutely. No, my phone sits on the nightstand, and it's there if I need to dictate or take a quick note in the middle of the night. That's right.
That distinction may have to do more with my age than anything else before writing it down. All right, so we talked a little bit about this, and maybe it's a little redundant, but did Mana help in certain situations in the story as far as how she was going to handle them? I know you're writing it, but you have created this character. Mm-hmm. Mana help with that?
Oh yeah, no. She's a very strong woman. She's very independent, and I'm fortunate enough to have some very strong, independent-willed women in my life. I have a very good wife and two daughters, and so Mana absolutely dictated the action and dictated where things are going to go. I mean, this is a story where she's being forced to participate in this heist really against her will. But she's not the type to take that lightly. And so she's doing everything she can, to make sure that things turn out the right way.
You know, each of the other characters around the Chinese businessman, you know, King and Queen and Jack, are really developed in ways that I liked, at least. Am I reading too much into the book to guess Initially, I thought Queen might be the partner in the next book. But am I reading too much into it to think that King might be her partner in the next book?
You're not far off to think that the King could be a recurring character. I like him very much. And certainly the way things end up in this story for him certainly sets him up to be somebody that we could see in the future. Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's good. I look forward to seeing that. Let me end with this one, if I might. So you're creating fictional characters and you're putting them in certain circumstances, not just cracking a safe, because there's also some emotional aspects to the book. And Mana has to deal with some of that. And her son, Evan, has to deal with some of that. What do you learn about yourself when you create these characters, put them in emotional situations, and then have to figure out how they get out of them?
Oh, a ton. I mean, it is, you know, people ask me why I write books. A lot of my law partners are sort of confused when they hear I do this. But in a lot of ways, it is very therapeutic. I mean, it lets me process a lot of, you know, things going on in my life. I mean, this book, I wrote it during the pandemic, and obviously that had a lot of emotions for everybody, me included. Like you said earlier in the interview, there are universal things that tie us all together. I'm not a female safecracker, but I've had mentors in my life. I have kids. I have friends. I have mentors, people that mean something to me, and how we bounce off each other, you know, is really really informs, you know, who we are as people. And if you can get that down onto the page, I think that hopefully makes the book more realistic and also makes the writing process, you know, that much more rewarding and appealing.
Let me flip the question a little bit. I just interviewed an author recently who, completely different genre, but who said that she works through her own issues in what she writes. Have you ever started a book idea with something that you personally wanted to work through?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of my Air Marshal books called Departure, there's a betrayal in there. And I won't give much away about the plot, but having experienced a big betrayal in my life, sort of off to the side, I had feelings of guilt. I had feelings of shame. I had feelings of anger. And I knew that the betrayal in that book, the whole time I was writing it, I knew that what I was really writing about were my feelings about the betrayal I'd witnessed. So,
yeah. And, you know, this sounds a little bit too touchy-feely, but the writing process is a therapeutic process, right? I mean, no matter 100%. What I was writing about, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, unfortunately, Parker, that's all the time we have for today. Folks, you've been listening to the Writers Forum, and I've been lucky enough to speak with author Parker Adams about his new book, The Lockbox. It's really a good page turner. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Parker, is there a website or other social media that folks can go to in order to learn more about you and to learn more about the book?
Sure. My website is josephreedbooks.com. And I'm also on social media as Joseph Reed Books. That's Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
And Reed is spelled R-E-I-D, correct?
It is. Thank you for clarifying that.
No, well, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, music for the show is provided by Valerie Hunt Jester. It's produced by our very own Tyler O'Brien. Tune in next Tuesday at 4 o'clock and Wednesday at 5:30 in the morning to hear the next segment of the Writers Forum.